Now live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday kicking off here, Jaguars Today. Now, Tyler Demmett's not that smart.
Was that for me?
Welcome back, Tony. He's not that smart, is he?
I don't know.
He didn't listen to that. He didn't have that plan in the back of his mind to play that to welcome you back after a one-day hiatus yesterday. Fat Tony, I don't want to break any HIPAA laws here, right? I don't want to delve too deep into your personal business.
No.
But the people want to know, how is Fat Tony doing?
The same as I was 2 days ago, to be honest with you, in the diagnosis stage of this entire thing continues.
So. And the entire thing is what? You have a shoulder slash left arm issue?
Numbness in my left arm that goes down, basically down my shoulder to my forearm into the first three fingers of my left hand.
Has made it difficult to play the golf.
They've told me not to play golf.
They have told you not to play golf.
They've told me not to, you know, do any heavy lifting, not to do any, like, physically exerting things, sports.
Did you tell them, don't worry, boss. Right. I don't have any issues with the heavy lifting.
Yeah. Well, I'm supposed to be helping a friend move this weekend. I told you I got a friend I've had for like 20 years.
Which is a shock.
That's leaving town this weekend. He got a job up in Minneapolis, and we're having like a going away deal for him tomorrow. We're helping him load up the truck that he's going to be driving up the entire country, and I'm going to be standing around going, way to go, guys. Lift those boxes.
That dresser looks like it would fit better in that corner
right.
of the truck.
That's basically going to be my role, but I get to go over there and hang out with him for the last time for a while.
Why don't we try it with the box spring on the other side?
Right.
Guys, see how that works out.
I'm sure they'll appreciate my encouragement.
All right. Well, Fat Tony, we're all concerned with you. None more so than me, because I miss my golf buddy.
I know it.
Out there.
I miss playing golf.
Well, I'm sure you do.
I go home every day.
All this year, right?
Yeah. I still have the J.P. Shattuck for Christmas got us the Pro V1 X's, right?
Yes, he
did. Pro V1s.
They were very, very nice.
Right. That was our Christmas gift from J.P., and they're sitting in the room, in the floor of my room. So every day I walk in and I just look at that and I go, oh,
pristine. You can just imagine.
I was like,
pressing.
I've actually opened the sleeve and just held one.
Just hold it, because they're so nice.
I can hit this. I can feel it compressing in my hand.
You ever kiss it and put it back in the box?
No,
you should.
But I have looked at them and gone, man, it'd be nice to use you guys.
Oh man, there's nothing quite like. I'm such a new golf equipment guy. And when I say equipment, I mean like new golf balls, new golf gloves. There's nothing like a pristine box of golf balls and a brand new glove to put you in the right frame of mind.
Oh yeah.
All right, Fat Tony, I hope we didn't break any HIPAA laws there.
No.
Glad you're back. We missed you yesterday. Mark Lamping was in with us yesterday. And
how was that?
I talked to him off the air. He tried to put a good word with Shad about adopting me. He said, just give it up. It's not happening at this point in time. He just advised me I'd best move on to other pursuits.
He adopted a bigger yacht.
Yes.
You're out.
Yes, another yacht he wants to adopt. And
he's got that in a real family.
That's his prerogative.
That's enough.
But we'll hear a little bit of the thoughts of Mark Lamping. If you missed it yesterday, we won't replay the entire interview. Heck, we only have a couple of hours to get into it today. OTAs are wrapped up, all done. Gus Bradley weighs in extensively on the end of OTAs. You'll hear from Gus. You'll hear from Doug Marrone as well. And that, to me, he is a key cog in this machine this year. When we talk about newcomers that have come here, we asked Dave Caldwell this question. We said, who is the guy that you look at that you acquire, or the new addition to this football team that maybe isn't getting enough attention? And the first thing he went to was the coaching staff. He talked about Doug Marrone and how you got a former head coach coming in here who has a, you know, great reputation as an offensive line guru, for lack of a better phrase, and certainly need that with a guy like Luke Jokel in need of major development going into year three now. All the signs up to this point have been positive, but Tony, what kind of signs can you really get from these offensive linemen in OTAs where it's non-contact?
Sure.
As Doug said yesterday, look at the footwork, look at the positioning and stuff, but you don't know until you can get your hands on somebody.
Yeah, and that's all fine too, by the way, that they're not doing any of the contact stuff. You don't want them doing it too often.
Well, I'm not saying they
especially during the offseason.
And I'm saying it's tough to evaluate.
No, it's tough to evaluate, and I think it's good for these players to be out there working on that technique stuff. Look, we've talked about Blake Bortles now for the last couple of weeks since he came back from Tom House and whatever he's doing mechanically to fix up the whatever he felt like was going wrong for him, right? And the repetition said it's going to take for the right process to be in play for a guy like Blake Bortles. It's the same thing for all those guys out there. The doing the right thing is something that you do with repetition. And so that the offensive linemen are out there going through basically just reps. It's just reps about technique and where your feet are and your hand placement and that type of stuff. And that's fine. You know, this time of year, and I think there are some things that you can use to teach guys a lot with that kind of thing at this time of year. It's not blocking like you're going to have to block here in a couple months in the National Football League, but it is the building blocks for getting you to the point where you can be a more effective player under Doug Marrone.
If you keep it tuned to the program here today, you'll hear Doug Marrone talking about Luke Jokel and others on that offensive line. Now, Luke Jokel, certainly a candidate, I think, for our question of the day. A response, you know, the question of the day deals with, you know, kind of your level of concern with any one individual player on the roster. We're talking about projected starters here. You know who's expected to start for the Jags at this point. If you don't, you probably don't listen to this program or follow it all that closely. I don't think there are too many mysteries right now. There's some competitions. You look at Wisniewski versus Bowanko. Bowanko out ahead because he's the only one on the field in that conversation. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of toss-ups out there at the moment, particularly with James Sample getting hurt. Most people feel that really cements Sergio Brown in, at least to start the season, to open it as a starter. So we ask you today, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, which projected starter on the Jags are you most concerned about in 2015? In other words, which guy is the shakiest? Which guy are you saying, I'm going to be holding my breath till I see how he plays this year?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a variety of answers that spring to mind. So you can share your thoughts with us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Of course, the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Phone lines will be open today at 641-1010. And that is also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line number, 641-1010. Ran into Pete Prisco yesterday, not literally, but I happened to see him in the lobby on our way out here. He was out here for the final day of OTAs and mentioned that he'll be in the building this morning. In fact, he should be in the building right now, Tony. They're filming here at Everbank a, I don't know what, a documentary, a retrospective, something having to do with the 1996 season to kind of commemorate the playoff run and all that, and Pete's involved with that. And he said hopefully he'd be wrapped up with that around the bottom of the hour, and he may swing by, so we may get a chance to talk with Pete Prisco from CBS Sports about what he's seen from Jaguar OTAs, at least as far as what we're able to discuss with you at that point in time. I know he's going to Tampa next week for Bucks minicamp, but Jags will be on the field Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Thursday open to the public, and they changed the time. They moved it up to the morning, right? Wasn't it supposed to be an afternoon practice?
I thought it was like an 11 to 1, and I think they switched it basically to like 9:30 to 11:30, basically what they're doing now.
Right. It's more like I think I saw 9:50 is when it's going to start next Thursday, something like that. So it's a little bit earlier. What is it? Is it Jaguars.com/minicamp? I'll check it out. I'm going to check it out because I'm pretty sure you've got to have – it's free to come, but you got to have a pass from the website. We'll get you the specifics of exactly what you need to dial up to get that locked in for yourself. Evan Mathis, you see the Philadelphia Eagle guard release yesterday. Wanting more money, Tony. Jags certainly have money. They've got plenty of cap space if they want to go out and make a move. And certainly Brandon Linder is locked in as a starter on the right side of the offensive line. How much interest, if any, would you have in bringing in Evan Mathis? Because he's going to cost a pretty penny, you would think. He was under a contract that was paying him around $5 million a year. He had a five-year, $25 million deal. He had 2 years left on the deal, and he wasn't happy with it because, I guess, Howie Roseman, the Eagles' former general manager, offered him a bump in pay of $1 million a year to kind of satisfy him rather than ripping it up and giving him an entirely new deal. This was last year. Well, Roseman has been marginalized in Philadelphia, and now Chip Kelly's calling the shots, and Kelly's like, hey, that offer's no longer on the table. I didn't make that offer. Howie made that offer. So that's not a long, it's not an Eagles offer where you get to turn it down and it just sits out there until you decide to change your mind. So Mathis disgruntled, and we've seen how Kelly runs that ship up there. You're on board 100% with Chip Kelly, or you're gone.
Yeah.
What about it, Evan Mathis? Any interest whatsoever?
I think you got to take a look at it. I do. I think you got to take a look at it because I think if you brought him in, he's clearly the best left guard you have from the day that he gets here. And you're talking about, that would mean, in my mind, you're probably letting go of Beatles, right? Like, that would be the idea. You're basically switching those two guys out. And Beadle is scheduled to make somewhere around $3 million, I think, this year, and $5 million basically starting next season. But I don't think he's going to be here in 2016, no matter what happens this year with Zane Beadle. I think that they're moving past that. So are they willing to give Mathis that probably $6-7 million a year he wants right now and basically proclaim him the starter at left guard for the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, and that's a question, right? Having just drafted A.J. Cann, and you feel like you've got an inexpensive alternative,
right? But
that
I think
you're going to develop on the roster.
You got to look at it, because Evan Mathis has been, if you look at what Pro Football Focus has to say about him, he's been the number one or two guard for the last 4 years.
Last four seasons. He was the number one guard 3 years running, and then last year was ranked number two, only played 9 games. But on a, you know, in the time he did play, he graded out to be the number two guard in the entirety of the NFL. He's 33 years old. But the problem is, Tony, look, even if they're interested, if you're Mathis, you're looking at it, are you going to guarantee me a starting spot if I walk in there? Maybe they would under those circumstances, but if you're the Jaguars, are you going to give him that multi-year deal, which I'm sure he wants? Now, if he wants to come in and say, well, the market's not good, we're well past the start of free agency, I'll take a one-year kind of prove-it-to-me deal, are you willing to take him on a plug-and-play basis? Well, in that scenario,
yes,
I would be, right? Yeah. I would be as well, but
if he wanted to come play here for 1 year, $6 million, whatever,
you're going to have to practically guarantee that money, though, right? I mean, he's not going to come in here and say, well, you're going to compete with Zane Beadle and A.J. Cann and see what emerges as the best option for us as far as that goes. He's going to want some assurance. There are teams with more clear-cut paths to starting, and not everybody is right up against the salary cap. So I think it's highly unlikely that you'll see Evan Mathis end up in Jacksonville. But I'm with you. I'd consider all options right now, because it's winning time, man. It's time to get out there and get the job done. And, you know, it's one of the things Mark Lamping talked about yesterday. Owner's not a patient guy. He may seem patient because you've had this period of time where he's not this one of these raving lunatic types who's always making headlines about this better improve right now. But Shad Khan wants it. He wants it big, and he wants it immediately. As we talked about with the shipyard project, he's like, you know what? Some people's timetable, they'd be happy to get it done in 10 years. He goes, that's not what's going to make us happy. That's not
right.
What we're looking for. We want it now. We want it yesterday, so to speak. And so, you know, I think putting W's on the board is across the board the biggest thing that everybody's looking for at this point in time. I know that sounds ridiculously obvious, but you know, the results just haven't been there for the last 3 years.
And in case you're wondering with Evan Mathis, he missed games 2 through 8 for the Eagles. He was healthy at the end of the year, so he's a healthy player going into this offseason. He's just not happy with that contract he has in Philadelphia at all. And right now, Chip Kelly continues to just chop through that roster to get it to what he wants it to look like, and we'll see how successful they are with that.
All right, we could talk about that today as well as we go along. Weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight. Which projected starter for the Jaguars are you most concerned with in 2015? Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. Hopeful to catch up with Pete Prisco. You'll definitely hear from Gus Bradley, Doug Marone, Mark Lamping throughout the course of the show today. Fat Tony is back in the house, and you are with us here on Jaguars Today, live at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Happy Friday to you as we march through the month of June. Minicamp next week for your Jacksonville Jaguars, then the long goodnight, the long kiss goodnight. See you later. Enjoy your summer. We'll see you back here for training camp. So, training camp's a long way off still. Maybe not in the big scheme of things, but if you're living day-to-day like the rest of us, it's a long way off. So, plan on getting out here next Thursday for the open practice. 9:50 is when things will get underway for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A little bit cooler then, and maybe they'll beat the rain a little bit easier. And it'll be the last day of minicamp. Maybe they'll get out of town a little earlier, too.
Maybe.
That's always a popular
And maybe we've
hit.
Been having a player come sit in studio with us for after practice a
yes.
lot of these days. Maybe with us being out there, he'll just come sit down.
Well, if they wrap up in time, maybe we'll get some sweaty, hulking figure of a gridiron star to belly up to the table and share their thoughts on OTAs, minicamp, and the soon-to-be 14-2 Jacksonville Jaguars. Once again, 14-2, but this season will end differently than 99 did, in a much better way. All right, we'll hear from Gus Bradley here coming up momentarily. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the phone number and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can weigh in with your thoughts on anything Jaguar or NFL related. Had my second draft of the week last night, Tony.
Yeah?
Fantasy draft last night. I had the sixth pick this time. And one of these deals where you don't find out what your pick is until like 10 minutes before the draft. I'm not a fan of that. I like to strategize a little bit, but almost had Le'Veon Bell fall in my lap. And I have a feeling this is going to be a theme. I had the third pick the other day. He went second. A lot of people are scared off because he's going to miss at least three, well, going to miss up to three games. May have that reduced on appeal. I'm not scared off of Le'Veon Bell because when he does play, he's going to give you such a week-to-week advantage over most guys that I would happily take him third overall. I certainly would have taken him sixth overall last night. Missed him by one spot. And ended up with Arian Foster, who always an injury concern, but when he's on the field, produces top five numbers. Didn't plan on doing it this way, but ended up going running back, running back, running back. And you can play three in this league. So I got C.J. Anderson in the middle of the second round from Denver. And I typically will handcuff one or two of my top guys. Missed out on Monty Ball because I had the clock running out on me late in the draft, and I was watching the NBA Finals, and I turned back, and I had like 5 seconds, and I kind of made a panic pick. It was a rookie move on my part.
Who'd you get?
I got Sam Bradford, who I queued up. I was going to take him as my next quarterback because I'm a big believer in whoever is quarterback in that offense is going to put up fantasy points.
Sure.
So I got Bradford in like, I mean, as like the 14th quarterback off the board. And then in round 16, I came back with Mark Sanchez. And I'll happily start Sanchez to start the season if he's there, depending on the matchups. I got Kaepernick as a backup. He was terrible last year, but got him in like the 13th round. I just punt on quarterback basically and try to load up at the other positions. But sure. I got Foster, Anderson, and Justin Forsett in a point per reception league. Forsett in the middle of the third round in a PPR league. I think it's going to be huge. If he stays healthy, there's no one on that roster to threaten him for any kind of significant touches. And Matt Forte set the reception record for running backs last year in Trestman's offense, and that's who the offensive coordinator is now in Baltimore. So that's what I ended up with my first three picks last night. We'll see how it all works out.
No Jags?
No Jags this time. I had two. I told you the other day I drafted Yeldon and Julius Thomas. This time around, I got those running backs up front, and I think I got Doug Martin in like the eighth or ninth round, something like that, as my fourth guy. And I took Greg Olsen, got him in round 7, which is a pretty good bargain. Tuesday, he went in round 5.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up taking Julius Thomas in round 8. Greg Olsen, I think, a better bet, safer bet in a point per reception league. I think he'll have more catches than Julius Thomas, maybe not as many touchdowns.
How late is Allen Robinson going right now in these drafts?
Allen Robinson, I want to say, I'll check it out. I'll log in and see where he went. I want to say 7th, 8th round. Something like that. You know, clearly the first Jaguar receiver off the board. Marquise Lee's not being drafted, or Allen Hurns, for the most part, just based on these two that I've participated in. And these are 18-round drafts. Start two running backs, three receivers, tight end, and a flex guy.
True flex.
Yeah, true flex. Right, with no, you can't play a quarterback.
No quarterback, yeah.
So, you know, Bortles is not getting drafted. T.J. Yeldon's going in round 4. Pretty consistently. And in both the drafts this week, Julius Thomas went in round 8, which is, you know, you compare that to last year, where he was going in the second round or early third at the latest in most leagues. So certainly a fall off from what people expect his production to be because he's not playing with Peyton Manning, but maybe he'll make up for some of that with volume, I have a feeling, this year. Donna Murphy's at the helm right now. Hi, Donna Murphy. How are you?
Hello, gentlemen.
Donna Murphy, are you as not thrilled as Tony and I are about the National Fantasy Football Convention being canceled in Las Vegas?
It would have been my first time out there. I wanted to see my little fake Elvises, man.
You wanted to see Gronk as Elvis Presley, and that would have been enough for you. Can you imagine if Gronk did Elvis? That would be all the highlights of your life coming together.
I've been trying to campaign around here that we need helmets and heels on the party ship, but no one's
the Gronk
taking
party ship. Where are they going, to the Bahamas?
Yeah.
Is that where they're headed?
Heck yeah. Seems
like, I think that's reasonable. I don't want to be, you know, it seems like a fun thing to do for me, Tony. I'll go on the Gronk party ship. No, I'd be like, Like, all right, I've had enough. I've had enough. Can we turn this thing around? One
there
night
is no
fun.
I've had enough on the Gronk party.
I don't think there is.
I mean, couldn't you just imagine us reporting live from there? It would be great.
I could actually imagine that, and it would be must listen.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot like the 24-hour Florida-Georgia broadcast.
It'd be like that. It'd be like the day the Jags got the legend of the day the Jags got awarded the franchise.
Yeah.
When a certain sports radio station apparently had an open bar tab.
Right.
And Lamb Chops was holding court all day long, and it was quite the scene. Quite the
That's what I've heard.
Professionalism may have gone out the window that day, Tony. All right, never the case with Gus Bradley. Let's hear a little bit from the head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars. OTA's wrapping up, and Gus pontificated yesterday about all things off season. His thoughts on the OTAs now being done and heading into minicamp next week.
It's good. I talked to him out in the field. I thought we've had a great OTA session. Really appreciate how they practice. I'm excited now. And I told him that. I said, I think, you know, you do it with humility. You talk about, we still have a long ways to go, but their mentality, their attitude, how we practice day after day, the position groups, the players, the coaches. There's a lot of things to be excited about. And now we go into minicamp, and it's to carry that momentum into that. So I think we keep challenging our guys that way. Hey, feed them a little sugar, tell them how they're doing, see how they respond, and then go about our next day's work when we get to minicamp.
Give them a little sugar, then chop their legs out from under them in case they're getting too big a head.
That's right.
Stop it.
We don't need a bunch of egos. A
little humility. They have nothing to not be humble about.
Right.
I mean, seriously, for the last 3 years, this franchise has won 9 games. Not everyone on this roster is responsible for every one of those years, but there's nothing to be. I want it to be the kind of problem. This would be a good problem. How do we convince these guys to be humble now that they've had all this success? That's the problem I'd like to see them wrestle with.
Well, they're young enough that they would. If they started winning, that could be a problem that they'd have to wrestle
Let's
with.
Let's have that
yeah,
problem.
It would be nice. Gus Bradley speaking after OTAs wrapping up yesterday on some of the guys who really have stood out for him over the course of the last 3 weeks.
Allen Robinson. I think Allen Robinson has really showed up in OTAs. You know, the practices that he's been in. You know, he's one guy. I think Gratz has done a nice job. You know, the times they've come after him, I like how he's competing. You know, and then there's Sip and Puz, and those guys all done good. I think our linebacking group, Telvin Smith, I just see him having, he's a guy that, like Blake, he's got confidence, but he is even more confident than he was last year. So I like the progress of a lot of those guys, but I'd say Allen Robinson has really stood out.
Allen Robinson, who hasn't been on the field but for half the time, Tony, that is an awesome sign for Allen Robinson, right?
Allen Robinson and the singling out of Dwayne Gratz is a little interesting,
hey,
too.
Good for Gratz, man. I mean, you know, he's got pride. He was a third-round pick. You don't get picked in the third round out of somebody's goodwill, so he's been challenged, man. They laid down the gauntlet. Nobody expects Dwayne Gratz to be a starter on this football team, and I'm still not expecting him to, but you know, when you go out there and when you draft him in the third round and then you bring in Demetrius McCray and then you bring in Colvin, and you think, okay, we got a young core. Well, then they prioritize or seem, you know, one of their top priorities going out there and getting Devon House is based on when they signed him and how much they spent on him. It's not intended. You're not signing Devon House just to send a message, but the signing of him sends a message.
Sure.
It's a, you know, an outcome of his signing, and Gratz is responding, it sounds like, according to Gus. So good for him. Gus talked about what we should expect. What will minicamp be like next week?
Well, you're going to see very similar as far as the schedule, but I think the reps will be spread out more. Give us another chance to look at all three position groups, first, second, and third. So I think that'll be the difference, but still situations that are involved. And now all the installs in. You know, so we can pick from a variety of plays, variety of defenses, and special teams units. But very similar format with the addition of maybe a few extra walkthroughs.
Gus Bradley speaking after OTAs wrapped up yesterday. We mentioned he singles out Dwayne Gratz, Devon House, the guy they brought in free agency. Gus was asked about his OTA performance, even though he was held out of practice yesterday as a precaution.
He's doing good. You know, a lot of the same techniques that he used in Green Bay, the read techniques, you know, they played some different coverages, but those principles were still in place. Maybe a few different coaching techniques and how we do things and how we play different formations. I think he's picking up pretty good. So it was nice to have him out there the whole time.
Allen Robinson, by the way, an in audio update here on Allen Robinson in my fantasy draft last night. Went 83rd pick overall, second to last pick of round 7. That seems about right. That seems fair.
Sure.
About where he's coming off the board at that time. Not too many number one, projected number one wide receivers for their teams still lasting to that point in time. A couple more from Gus before we take a quick time out. And talking about Devon House just a moment ago, or I'm sorry, the next, yeah, talking about Devon House, what is his next step at this point in time?
Well, I think for us to see him with pads on, you know, and competing for the ball and the ability to make plays when you know, he's defending. I think that's really with all the corners. You know, I think we've seen our corners, they do a good job with the techniques. They do a good job in coverage principles. And now the finish part is what we're looking for. And he's no different.
So the next step is to see them play football.
Yeah.
With pads on.
Right, something that actually matters.
Yes.
Other than what Todd Wash called it, gym class.
That's right, gym class out there for the last 3 weeks, and it'll be gym class again next week. Gus Bradley talking about Josh Wells, who was a backup tackle for this team last year, and how much bigger he looks this offseason.
I think our offensive line as a group has gotten stronger through the offseason. That was one of the things we asked of them. I think you remember last year we were more zone principal. And what we asked them to be, a little bit more gap scheme now, so it requires that we can have more size. I think that will help in a variety. It will help in pass protection. It will help in field goal and extra points, believe it or not, because we've got more size. You know, so, and Josh is one of those guys, his versatility. When Doug came in, you know, Luke and I talked about, you know, we really weren't going to give any information on the guys other than what we saw on tape, so guys could come up with their own, you know, their own judgments off of players and how they play. And he watched practice tape, and we were excited about Josh Wells because of that versatility. So it's not surprising, especially guys like him and Shatley, I think, are two guys that have shown some things.
Considering all the things that went wrong last year, it's no surprise you forget about they went through that whole spell where they couldn't block anybody on kick attempts,
yeah.
Right? I mean, block field goals, block kicks, what have you.
It was terrible.
Just getting caved, particularly on the left side of the offensive line. So not the, you know, your top priority, but certainly an important one.
They made it a priority this offseason to help special teams.
They absolutely did. But and the only way to help that is to improve the offensive line. But have bigger bodies in there that are stronger because they were just getting pushed around sometimes last year at the point of attack. We'll take a timeout. We'll hear more from Gus Bradley coming up, also from Doug Marone. And Mark Lamping, if you missed him yesterday, the Jaguars president, joined us here live on Jaguars Today. Well, some thoughts on that. Pete Prisco in the vicinity may pop in and spend some time with us as well, talk about what he's seen from this football team throughout OTAs. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Donna Murphy here with you, at least for the moment. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Happy Friday, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac since 1905. Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer right here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And, by the way, the only Cadillac dealer, Claude Nolan Cadillac, in North Florida to sell and service the ELR, the elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac just one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com, or you can do that and visit them as well at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111, 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Fat Tony off of his sick bed. He's back with us. He's going to go see a movie today. No, it's not Mad Max. For the eighth time, seventh, sixth time,
it
whatever.
Would be seven if seven. I went today.
You'll probably go this weekend, but not today.
Not today.
Who knows? Maybe you'll see a double feature. You got Jurassic World today?
I'm going to see Jurassic World this afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I'm reading online last night some paleontologist who, you know, they've taken exception to the movie because there's a common theory now among the paleontologists that mm-hmm. a lot of these dinosaurs were running around weren't scaly. They had feathers. They're a lot more, even though they're gigantic with these massive teeth
sure.
and claws, they much more resembled birds than we believed all these years growing up, much more so than lizards, at least some of them.
Sure, which was an idea the first movie brought to light, too, that they're a lot more like birds than
correct. But
reptiles.
But a lot of them, actually, I was even reading last night, they think that T-Rex had feathers. Okay, people are like, that's crazy, T-Rex doesn't have feathers. Well, you know,
even if the T-Rex
had
feathers,
a living one.
Right? Even if the T-Rex had feathers, I don't care if he has feathers in a Jurassic Park movie.
I don't either. My point being, apparently there's some people who really do that. This is not historically accurate. Yeah, you're right. A movie about taking some DNA out of some mosquito trapped in amber and creating a living dinosaur out of it is not historically accurate.
Their DNA.
Tony.
Where did you come from?
Well, it's filling in with a frog. See?
That's right.
If you're missing any strands.
Bingo.
There you have it.
Dino DNA.
I'm going to go see it Monday, I think. Colin wanted to go see it. I don't think he's ever sat through any of the first three Jurassic movies. But
yeah, you were telling me the story about...
Well, they got Lego sets now.
This weekend.
They got Lego sets.
This past weekend when Jurassic Park was on, you're like, hey, Colin, watch a few minutes.
Watch a couple minutes.
He was tuned out.
Yeah, but he's all about Jurassic World. Like, he knows the whole plot of this movie.
What?
He does, because he watches, you know, because they have Lego sets out now, so he has to be well-versed in who the characters are when he asks for a Lego set for Christmas. I don't have to get this one, Daddy, but I'll just bring your attention to the Velociraptor escape set or whatever.
If I ever have kids, it's going to be crushing. The reality of what kids find interesting, and it's like, you're excited about Jurassic World? It's like Jurassic Park was so good.
Oh, so good.
And I can't even get him to sit down and enjoy 10 minutes of it. But this Jurassic World movie,
right?
That's
it's the same thing. Do you get it? You can watch this one for free right now in your house. Can you not?
It's like the Star Wars thing. I know Colin loves those first three, the episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars. And I'm just, every time I watch them, I'm like, oh.
Episode 3 is his all-time favorite.
What it used to be. Like, I go back to A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back, and I'm like, man, those movies were amazing.
We watched Empire this week. It was on recently.
Right. It's just that somebody really would have any of Episode 1, 2, and 3 as their favorite Star Wars movie blows my mind.
Yeah.
But it's a child, so I have to come to terms with that.
I think he throws number 4, which he insists on calling A New Hope, and I know that's what they technically call it now. It's just simply Star Wars.
Yeah, to keep kids. Keep it.
Okay.
Keep it in line.
He keeps that down the list just to spite me, is what he does. Because he's constantly re-ranking the top 6, Daddy. Do you know which ones are my favorite Star Wars movies? Well, what week is it, Colin?
Right.
I'm not sure. I know number 3.
He likes the lava fight.
I think he likes the lava fight. He likes 3, and he likes 5, which at least he has some taste on that one.
Empire's the best.
It is. It's pretty
good.
To
me, it's the best.
I like the original. Anyway, moving along. Fat Tony next week with a movie review. I can't watch it this weekend because I've got shows for the next 3 days on Sirius, so Monday matinee is kind of the plan right now. So we'll see how that whole thing goes. Let's get back to Gus Bradley. Blake Bortles, one of the things he's wanted to work on this offseason was better decision-making, right? Anytime you throw 17 interceptions, that's partly to blame.
It's something you may want to work on.
You would think that's becomes a priority to work on in the offseason, and Gus weighed in on what he's seen for Blake in that department.
I think he's playing with more confidence. I always thought he was confident. But he feels, I think the team senses he's playing with more confidence. And by that, I think he's got more confidence in his mechanics, and he'll take the chances. But I think when he takes chances or takes risks, it's hard to say he feels more confident in doing that. And I think the team senses it. So he's not where he wants to be, though. I think that consistency part of it for him is still coming. But I know as a coaching staff and as the players around him, they feel a big difference.
We hope to see a big difference for a quarterback going from year one to year two. You listen to all these talking heads on all the networks that cover the NFL, and they'll tell you, the former quarterbacks will tell you, that the biggest jump you have is from year one to year two as far as just how much more comfortable you are in the National Football League. Does that change with learning an entirely new offense again? We'll see with a guy like Blake Bortles. Gus Bradley went on to talk about that linebacker core, which is probably the thinnest position on the football team, but they did add one big piece in free agency this offseason in Dan Skuda. Gus talked about Skuda and his versatility.
Well, one of the things we liked about him was he played on the line of scrimmage, setting the edge, playing on the line of scrimmage, had no issue. Rushing the passer, did a nice job. I think he had 5 sacks, something like that. So that was good. The issue we had was behind the ball. That's where we went back a couple of years ago and saw. So for him to have the versatility of playing all 3 linebacker spots is probably pretty challenging because, you know, the last time he played behind the ball was 2 years ago. So he's just getting accustomed to that. The number of times we're going to ask him to do that, I thought he's picked it up pretty well, but probably not a guy that's going to be the swing guy.
All right, moving on from that, Chris Clemens didn't show up for OTAs. Not wholly shocking or unexpected. That seems to be the pattern with Chris Clemens. The question is, will he be here for veteran minicamp? Gus was asked what he wants to see from Chris Clemens next week. I would think attendance would be number one.
First, see him. That would be the second thing. No, I think for him to get out here to see it, you know, how he is and the shape that he's in. And, you know, I obviously we're not going to come out here and get 10 reps and try to get caught up and everything. But to see him out here and compete, be around his teammates and see where he's at, I think it'll be good.
Just see him, Tony.
Just see him. Seeing him would be nice. From Gus Bradley, a final comment from him here, asked about Monty Kiffin, who's been out at OTAs throughout the last 3 weeks, and if he has any role with this team going forward.
Yeah, you know what? I can understand the questions about that. He is just, you know, to me, I think I've always had an objective to try to help former players if given the opportunity. And then second of all, coaches that have maybe given so much to the league, and if you have an opportunity to give back to them, to try to do that. And that's where Kip falls in. We don't have a position open for him. You know, but just to have him around our guys in an OTA setting, he meets with our younger coaches. They, you know, get everything they can out of him. He watches practice tape, you know, and he's around. And I told him, I said, you know, anytime during OTAs, you can come up. You're more than welcome. Be around, and we'll put you in gear and let you walk around, but... You know, no commitment on our end, but I think it's always good. I think more or less the guy can still coach, and to give him an opportunity to be around the game, I think is awesome.
That's cool if, you know, it feels like Monty Kiffin's the beneficiary there. It sounds like the Jaguars defensive coaching staff's a real beneficiary.
Sure.
There, right? I mean, he's going to come in, Tony. He's, you know,
he's been one of the best.
Oh, he's probably forgotten more about defense, as they like to say, than these guys ever knew, right? Or some of them ever knew. And that's not an insult to the current coaching staff. That's just a recognition of his stature in the game and how long he's done it at a high level. So good for Monty Kiffin if he gets something out of it, because I would imagine the Jags defensive coaches certainly do.
Yeah, they got to be getting something out of it. And if Monty Kiffin hangs out for 3 weeks here in Jacksonville and then gets to go play golf for the entire summer, more power to him, man.
World either. All right, let's hear a few from Doug Marrone right here. Doug Marrone, of course, former head coach of your Buffalo Bills, and now coming in to coach the offensive line. He talked about the challenge of coaching an O-line and being a position coach now.
You know, the challenge when you coach the line, the offensive line, is at this time of year, you know, you're really not in pads. So you can, you know, what you're trying to develop is how well do they take coaching? How well are they doing the drills? And are you seeing those drills carry over onto the field? So that's what you're evaluating.
Doug Marrone, the new offensive line coach, went on to talk about moving players around that line at different positions during this time of the year.
But one of the things in minicamp, what I like to do, I talked to Coach Olson about it, and again, we're going to bring it up to Coach Bradley, is during the minicamp, moving some people around just to get that flexibility so we can get the, you know, the five best players playing, the seven best players up for game day, and knowing which way who's going to be moving inside and out.
That's interesting, because you will see guys move around, and that's part of the reason that they don't want you reporting on these OTA practices. It may not be the overriding reason, but it's one of them, is that they experiment with guys in different areas, and all of a sudden if you see a guy who typically is a starter letting somebody else get some starter-type reps just to test him out or playing in another position, all of a sudden it becomes a big thing. Well, why are you doing that? Well, it's really more for their information so they can better assess how the many different ways they can use that player potentially. Doesn't necessarily mean there's a position switch in the offing or anything like that.
No, it just means, look, you got guys that are going to have to play different positions in all likelihood throughout the year, and trying to figure out where this guy may be most comfortable. I mean, a guy like Austin Pastore, you want him to be able to play more than one position, so move these guys around a little bit and see what you got where.
All right, we got more from Doug Marrone. We'll have that coming up in a moment. We've got this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL straight ahead, and then more from Doug Marrone, and we'll hear from Mark Lamping yesterday. If you missed it, we're not going to play the entirety of the interview. He joined me in studio yesterday. We'll play a few of the highlights that may pertain to your fan experience as fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars. All that coming up on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. I'm Mike Dempsey. He's Fat Tony. We're live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry here on Jaguars Today. We'll start with a birthday, 1979, Tony. 79. Wow. 11 years after I was born, and now pretty much done, right? Dallas Clark, 36 years old today. How many Pro Bowls in Dallas Clark's career?
My guess would be three.
One.
Really?
One. He caught 100 passes one season. I'm guessing that was the year he was first team All-Pro. And but I guess you had, you know, Tony Gonzalez with Kansas City. You had Antonio Gates at the height of his powers.
Right.
You know, so you had a couple of big-time guys there that were always going to fill two of the spots through most of Clark's
tenure. Yeah, you would think at some point one or both those guys would say they couldn't go or didn't want to go or something. And I would think Dallas Clark would have been high enough among the alternates that he would have played in more than one. But
you would think, somewhere along the line.
Especially considering the Colts only played in the one Super Bowl.
Right.
But maybe
he was available.
Yeah, maybe he just didn't, whatever.
This date, June 12th, 1994, morbid anniversary. Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman murdered outside of Nicole Brown Simpson's home in Brentwood, California. O.J. Simpson, of course, acquitted of the killings in a court of law, later held liable in a civil suit. Allegedly, O.J. murdered those people, Tony. Allegedly. Do you still need to say that? Allegedly?
He was found not guilty.
He was found not guilty. You're absolutely correct. Also on this date, Steve Young retired from the National Football League. Who's the player that sent him into nappy land that ended his career? Do you remember?
Steve Young?
Yes.
No.
No, it wasn't Steve Young. I'm talking about Steve Young. Aeneas Williams of the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah.
Came on the blitz. The blitz was not picked up, and neither were Steve Young's faculties at that point in time. And concussion, and that pretty much ended his career. And he called it a career officially on this date in the year 2000. That is this date in football history, presented by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're right here in town on Gate Parkway. If you need a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, maybe you want the custom fit Stop Snoring Somnomed mouth guard. Check out Dr. McCall, 620-9225. For all your dental needs, visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The New England Patriots swapped out third-string quarterbacks yesterday, releasing first-year quarterback Garrett Gilbert out of Southern Methodist and signing veteran QB Matt Flynn to a one-year deal. The Patriots are obviously still potentially going to be without Tom Brady for the first 4 weeks of the regular season, depending upon the results of the appeal hearing set for later this month. And second-year quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo has reportedly struggled at times in the team's OTAs to this point in the offseason. The Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly continue to clean house, apparently. This time it was Pro Bowl left guard Evan Mathis, who has been unhappy with his contract for the last two offseasons, a five-year, $25 million deal that Mathis signed in 2012. Mathis was scheduled to make $5.5 million this year, $6 million next season. Evan Mathis has been ranked as the number one or two offensive guard every year since 2011, according to Pro Football Focus, including being second last year despite only playing in nine games. And that's a cumulative rating for them, by the way. Houston Texans head coach Bill O'Brien told Mike Silver that he believes Jadeveon Clowney will be ready to go week one for the Texans against Kansas City after undergoing microfracture surgery on his knee last year. He was only able to play in four games in his rookie year.
There you have it, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, as we take a look now on more of what Doug Marrone had to say yesterday following practice with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jags players getting the day off, getting out of town. If you're going to get the day off, they much prefer it this way. Gus said, hey, you know what? We're not going to play around. We're not going to make you dress out.
You're good.
And show up, go. And they'll love him for that. Are you kidding me? They probably schedule the extra day factoring in, you know, because they had 3 day weeks each of the last 2 weeks. This is a 4 day week. You pretty much know unless you get, you know, crappy effort or really sloppy execution that you're going to cancel that last day. It's almost a punishment day if you're not paying attention, if you get a little senioritis on your final day of OTAs. Doug Marrone, talking about Zane Beatles, asked yesterday how Beatles is progressing. Here's what he had to say.
You know, a lot of times you think, hey, this is a player that's played quite a bit or has played X amount of games. You know, what you see is what you get, but that has not been the case. I've seen him progress rapidly, actually, you know, between day one and day two.
That's good to hear, and for a guy like Zane Beatles who's going to be fighting for that starting spot, you would think, with A.J. Cann. And who knows, it's going to be interesting to me how Austin Pastore fits in this entire thing. He may be in the mix for that left guard spot, maybe. I don't know. He's got the longest odds, I would think, to start at that spot, but certainly played a lot of right tackle for this team. So how does he fit in to this offensive line? Doug Marrone also asked about the real big question mark on that offensive line, which is third-year player now Luke Jokel and how he's looked in OTAs.
Well, I see great progress. I really do, and not just out of him, but at everyone. But, you know, he's put on some extra weight, which has been good weight, some lean muscle mass. Obviously, it's a challenge for all of us learning a new system, but I've seen him progressing and getting better each day. So, you know, I'm excited with the direction that he's going. Again, I think he feels the same way. You know, there's a confidence that you see out there. You know, there's still a level of inconsistency, but, you know, we understand that right now. But, again, it's progressing in the right direction.
And with that playing, once again, we remind you, question of the day is which projected starter are you most concerned about in 2015? Weigh in via the Twitter, the Facebook page, or text us your thoughts at 641-1010 on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Luke Jokel going to be a big question mark. We'll talk with Pete Prisco about him coming up in just a couple minutes. Pete's going to pop in about 5 minutes with us. Doug Marrone asked about Jeremy Parnell, what he liked about the tape that he saw of Parnell before working with him.
Well, you know, not to be repetitive, you know, it's different. You know, each player has different things that we're working on. You know, Jeremy obviously had a lot of success in the short period of time that he did play. A lot of times with that is getting back in, developing that consistency. He brings a good level because even though he's not have had a lot of games that he's played, he's been around a veteran team. He's been around a team that, you know, played well together up front, with the mentality of, you know, being tough and being physical. So I think he brings some of that to the room as well as everybody else.
I know they were said to have loved what they saw of him on tape. I know it's a small sample size, but all he can do is dominate it.
Yeah, I watched a little bit, at least, of all the guys they brought in free agency. Now, me watching, whatever that means. But I can tell you Parnell was my favorite guy to watch, too. Of the guys they brought in, Parnell, his tape was my favorite to watch of any of them because you can see the athleticism of a guy who played basketball for a long time, and he's mean. He's just mean out there on the football field, which is something I think that Jags offensive line needed a little dose of.
We need mean. He'll be lining up next to Brandon Linder this year, and Marrone said Linder looks more like a veteran out there.
You know, I'll be honest. I've been, you know, surprised of where he is at this stage. I think he's ahead of the game for when you think of a first-year player playing. I think he's very sound technically. I think he's very tough, very strong, very agile. He has a lot of traits that you look for in that position. So I think, you know, when I look at him, I still have to remember that he's still a first-year player and lacks a little bit of that experience of playing games. But when he goes on the field, he doesn't seem that way.
More just, you know, that's it's steady needle pointing up, up, up. Tank is full on Brandon Linder.
Yep.
That's not one we're much concerned with right now. And finally, Doug Marrone talking about A.J. Cann, who we had in studio with us earlier this week. He said they're getting him as many opportunities right now as they possibly can.
As far as A.J., again, the challenge is the reps, you know, trying to get him more reps because with younger players, the more reps you get them, the faster they'll progress. He's done a really good job in the classroom. He's been out on that field. There's some things that are different for him. Technically, that he's done in college, that he's going to have to learn to do a better job at this level.
All right, there you go. A little bit from Doug Marrone. Still to come, we'll hear a little bit from Mark Lamping from yesterday's sit-down interview with him. Pete Prisco going to join us in about 5 minutes in studio from CBSSports.com as well. Got this tweet in, Tony, at Josh Wade 2585 said, in regard to paleontologists, they have no idea what dinosaurs had as skin. They're just trying to stay relevant. That would suggest that they've ever been relevant. I mean, what are they? I mean, a paleontologist, how relevant is that?
Right.
You know, I think we could probably all survive without paleontologists, to be quite frank with you.
Probably.
I think we'd be just fine in that regard.
What are we learning about today's society from dinosaurs?
I do not know.
I'm sure there's something.
Avoid major comet impacts.
I'm sure a paleontologist would be upset with me. And heck.
Oh, are you kidding me?
You know, without paleontologists.
All the scientific advancements that have come from digging up bones?
That's right. If nothing else, we got Jurassic Park. If nothing else that we've been given, we got Jurassic Park.
Right? It's not quite the same. Archaeologists, I'll throw them in there as well, though. You know, they're all the same.
But without archaeologists,
they all dig up things.
Right. Without archaeologists, I don't have...
Indy. Right, Indy Jones.
That great scene from, like, the beginning of The Exorcist. There's a lot of stuff that archaeologists have brought to my entertainment.
There you go. Your personal entertainment. And that's what keeps them relevant. Thank you for weighing in on that, Josh. Pete Prisco, coming up next, going to sit down with us here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Jaguars today on a Cardinal and Cadillac Friday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Teddy Ballgame, Pete Prisco's favorite. Did you know Ted Nugent is Prisco's favorite music of all time?
I thought it was Bon Jovi.
I have no idea, actually.
I like Bon Jovi. You remember that?
It was always Bon Jovi.
Hey, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Bon Jovi. I'm old.
You are an Earth, Wind, and Fire guy.
Yeah. I am an Earth, Wind, and Fire
guy. I'm an old guy, too. I'm not really a Ted Nugent guy. This is okay, though. I don't mind this.
Yeah. I'm not a Ted Nugent guy.
That's
at all.
Fine. What have you been up to today, huh?
I'm actually working on an oral history of the 1996 Jaguars.
Oral history.
Yeah.
Sounds so highfalutin.
It is highfalutin. Well, you know, Super Bowl 50 is this year. It's on CBS. It's a big deal.
Yep.
And so we're doing all these stories and videos and stuff. And one of the ones that they suggested was, you know, because it was such a weird season in the history of the National Football League, was the 96 Jaguars. So I got Pacelli and Brunel and Lagerman, and we did a video shoot upstairs in the terrace suite, and I'm going through talking to as many players as I can about that season.
Nice, nice.
So is it going to be like something for the website, or is this going to be
I don't know what
TV
they're going to do.
Or?
The story's going to be for the website. I don't know what the video will, what they'll do with it. You know, who knows? But actually, the guys here shot it. They did a great job. They hired them out, and, you know, it was a round table. We had, you know, five cameras, the wide shot, the whole deal. I had a good look out at the stadium without seeing the stage out there, which was nice. And,
nice.
It'll be good. I've covered this league a long time, and, you know, I was right in the smack dab middle of that story. But I'll tell you what, there is no weirder season ever in the National Football League.
Didn't you have a book on the shelves
right
like
here.
3 days? Was it how quick
there
was
it? Jags
and
Riches.
Let me see the book. How long was it before truly the end of the season before this hit with John Osier and Pete Prisco?
Yeah, young guys in the back. If you open up the back flap, you can see pictures of two young
guys.
I'll
be the judge of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Osier definitely still had a little holdover from the Flock of Seagulls days.
He did, and I had hair back then.
But you did have hair back then.
Yeah.
Which, it's looks like your cousin.
Yeah.
I recognize it so much.
Who are
those guys? This thing was on the stands. This is like one of those overnight books practically, right?
We had to have it out by end of May.
Okay.
It was supposed to be on the stands. It was St. Martin's Press, which is actually a big company. It was supposed to be on the stands by the time the season opened before the season, but they delayed it. And once the next season starts, nobody cares about the season that was just played.
Right.
So it was bad. We made some money on it. We didn't make as much as we could. But I went back and reread it again.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I was a good reporter.
Were
back
you
in
good?
The day.
Were you? What happened?
I mean, there's stories. We don't see stories like this anymore. You should see these things that I used to stir up: Coughlin and Andre Rison. And I mean, it was incredible.
Pete Prisco never afraid to be part of the story.
No, I made my. Hey, it's good for me. It's good for me. Always.
I give you full credit on that quote.
Yeah.
You may not be the only one who says it, but we believe it with you.
I live it, too.
It's funny. We were going to do a top five this week. We may push it back to next week, but we were doing top five individual performances.
Single game.
Yeah, in Jaguars history. And so I was spending a couple hours yesterday going through some of the single game stuff, and there's some that jump right to mind, but you go back to that
Keenan.
Run. Right, that run in 96. There was so much that had to go right for that football team in that run. And the fact that Natron Means was here for two seasons, I think it was, had one 100-yard rushing game in the regular season, two in that run in 96.
Right.
I mean, he was so unbelievable for them in that 96 playoff run.
The best individual game performance that nobody will mention will be Pacelli on Bruce Smith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, that's it, because you can't statistically necessarily measure other than the fact that he skunked Bruce Smith, but that really put Tony on the national landscape there in only his second year in the league.
And I remember Bruce Smith said, well, he got double teamed and some scheme help and everything. He was one-on-one
the
entire game.
Right. Ask Tony. Well, I'm sure you have. Ask Tony about that. He doesn't take kindly to Bruce Smith's characterization of how that whole thing played
out. Bruce Smith
out.
Never shook his hand after the game.
After the game?
Never shook his hand.
He's ticked.
Yeah, he dominated.
That's all right.
Him.
You know what? You're okay. I don't mind. I'm not a big post-game handshake guy anyway. Like the
hugging and all that?
That's what they choose to do. Just like we've seen in the past, like LeBron James being criticized. Series is over. He goes to the locker room. Do you really think the other team cares about getting congratulations from the guys they just dispatched. No. I don't think it's that big a deal.
But you should go shake their hand. It's over with. I'm a big believer in what, and fans never quite grasp this, is because, like, they get mad when guys hug and talk and take pictures after the game. Look, it's their job. Job's over. Game's over. Go home.
Granted, but you have a bad day on the job. You know what I mean? I mean, I get it. When you have a bad day on the job, maybe you clock out, you feel that way. But I think for fans, they're like, wow.
Fans take it harder than the players do.
Oh, no question they do. Yeah. But in the aftermath, you know, you want your players, at least I do. I don't want them laughing it up. I'm kind of on the side of the fans on that. I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the players all say it. You know, they're mercenaries to a large degree, but you're out there giggling, you know, joking around. You just had your guts ripped out. Maybe your season ended, something like that. They want at least you to pretend that you're feeling it like they are.
Yeah, see, I never, ever bought into that. The game's over. It's done. It's finished. It's gone. You move on. But said, now you can start worrying about it. You got to drive the kid to school the next day. What are you going to eat for dinner?
You really think that's what they're worried? You're sitting there at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. Oh, I got to get up at once 7 and take the kid to school. Stop.
It's just like when you're sitting here doing your job, you're not thinking about what you're doing later on?
If I had a bad show, which rarely happens, as we know.
Probably right now because I'm off.
Exactly. That's why we brought you in to save this one. Yeah.
You
have a bad day.
Sometimes you're thinking about teeing it off tomorrow sometime.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're going to think about what you're eating for dinner later.
That's because I'm usually victorious in my 2 hours a day. Pete, what have you seen? How much OTAs have you seen with the Jags?
I've been out probably 3 or 4 days. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What
are we allowed not to talk about?
Well, anything.
When did that become a rule, by the way?
I've got to get Dave and Gus
Crabb about that. When did that become a rule?
At least they let you watch it. You know, like in New England, they're letting you watch like one a week.
I don't understand the paranoia in the National Football
League. Oh, it's rampant.
Everybody knows what everybody else does, okay? There are no secrets. There are absolutely no secrets. I used to have this fight with Coughlin on a regular basis. There are no secrets. They know what you do. Everybody knows what everybody else does. So why so much paranoia? It makes no sense to me.
I don't know.
Well, so what are we allowed to say we can see?
I think in general terms, who has stood out?
Individual
to you,
players?
Good? Yeah,
I
sure.
think Allen Robinson looks fantastic.
And Gus mentioned, first guy he mentioned yesterday, which I thought is a great sign for Allen Robinson, considering he's only out there half the time.
Allen Robinson made a catch yesterday in the end zone. The day before, he made 3 of them where he jumped up and made, high point of the ball, made great catches. He looks quicker to me. And, you know, sometimes when a guy comes into the league, he's thinking and not reacting, and he's just making do with his athletic ability. Well, now he's probably not thinking as much, even though it's a new offense. He looks like he's more comfortable with it. He just looks more comfortable, quicker, and, look, he loves the game. Everybody you talk to around here says the kid works at it. He loves it. I wouldn't be surprised if this kid's not a significantly better receiver than we all expect him to be.
Yeah, he looked that way immediately last year, right? Like you said, wow, he seemed like he was the steal of the draft in terms of that receiver core.
That rookie camp, I remember just being out there for rookie camp last year, and it was you kind of have an idea of who Allen Robinson is, but I remember coming away from that so impressed, just with his hands. His ability to go up and get the football was something we haven't seen around here.
Would you have drafted a wide receiver? Would you have taken Amari Cooper?
No.
Was Dante Fowler the right
I would have
pick?
Taken Leonard Williams. I told Dave Caldwell that.
I would have as well. I would have as well. All right, but let's take Leonard Williams out of it then. Obviously, he was available to them, but Fowler compared to Cooper.
I would have taken Fowler.
They went the right way.
I think they went the right way. Yeah. You know, what happened, but
you can't.
And I saw him coming in today, and I looked at him. I mean, he's a big kid. He's just a big physical kid. Yeah, I think I would have taken Williams. But if not Williams, then I would have taken Fowler.
Yeah, I would have taken Williams, too. I think if he's – and maybe they don't agree with the assessment that he's the best player that was out there in the draft. I don't think they're that set. I don't think the guys they have in front of him or would have had there are so front line that he couldn't have, you know, made that unit significantly better. Question of the day we're asking people is, out of the projected starters for this team, and you know who they are, obviously, who's the one that concerns you the most right now?
Boy, let me think about that. Probably Sergio Brown.
Okay.
To me, I think you look at the offensive line. I think whoever starts at center will be better than they were a year. Whether it's Bwanga, I think it'd be Wisniewski because he's small. You know, he knows the system. It might end up being him. So you go through the offensive line. I think Linder's going to be a hell of a player. I think Parnell's going to be a better player than people think he's going to be. The left guard, Beatles. I was very critical of Beatles from the word day he got here and last season. I thought he played better at the end of the year. So. I mean, and if he's not the starter, then the kid that they drafted out of South Carolina is a hell of a football player.
Right, and if he is a starter, I mean, he probably got pushed and beat him out.
So he'll be better. Jokel, to me, looks like a different body type player now than he was a year. And I thought he was too light. Played 298.
Right.
Yeah, way too light. So No, so he's not it. Julius Thomas is not the guy. The wide receivers, look, I think they're ready to make the ascension. We don't know. It's like in '90s. Just talking about the '96 team, nobody knew what Keenan and Jimmy were.
Sure.
And they took the ascension. So I think they're okay. So I go to the defense, and the starting linebackers are fine. It's the depth there that's a concern. But I go to the secondary. I think the corners are going to be really, really good. Big, long, athletic, and Colvin's going to be the guy to keep an eye on there. And I think Cyprian, if he has a free safety that can run and you know, cover a lot of ground, he'd be a better player down in the box, more like the Seahawks use Cam Chancellor, but he's been caught in some situations where he had to play in coverage, and I don't think that's a strong suit. So it's the free safety. And they obviously think it's still a problem because they drafted Sample and thought he was going to come in and push for time. So to me, it's the free safety position.
Yeah, and I don't think they went out and got Sergio Brown thinking, well, this answers every problem. You know, he's a guy, maybe a stopgap. He could play free safety. Certainly, as Dave Caldwell describes him, a plus special teamer as well. So,
I'll be honest with you. I know people in the Colts organization that were a little surprised by that contract.
By giving him that deal.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but the way I look at it, it's not like you went out. The contract they gave Devon House indicates they think he can come in and be one of the two starters. I think what they gave Sergio Brown and the approach, and it was kind of a fallback. Okay, we missed out on Devin McCourty, and it's not a great market. Let's take this guy. We can plug him in. He's got some versatility. If we find an upgrade, we're certainly open.
Yeah, and there's only so many guys that can play that position the way it needs to be played nowadays, which is why they went after McCourty. He's one of them. You know, Earl Thomas is another. Eric Weddle, who will be a free agent next year, is another one of them. There's only so many of those guys, so you got to try and make do with what you can get.
You went right past the quarterback. You didn't mention the QB.
Not concerned about him.
Not concerned.
No, okay. I think he's going to make the right steps and take the right jump up. Look, he played every play last year almost with five or six rookies around him. And I was told by those guys that on every single play, at least two, if not three of them, made a mistake on every play, including him now.
Sure.
But there were, you know, you can't play quarterback that way. The receivers weren't in sync. The line wasn't in sync. It's tough to play quarterback. I thought when he came on the field, when we saw him in preseason, he was playing loose, free, looked good. When he went on the field as a starter, loose, free, looked good. Well, then they game plan for him. And when they game plan for him, then all of a sudden he started getting tight. And that happens to a young quarterback. He started figuring out a little bit. And then he pressed. And his mechanics waned. And when his mechanics waned, his balls were sailing. And, you know, and people say, well, you get pick sixes, picks. Those are fluke plays. You throw an interception, but if it's a pick six, that doesn't happen often in the NFL. So it's kind of a little bit of fluke. Yes, it's a bad throw, but it's don't make it bigger than it is just because it was a pick six. Then he got better at the end of the season again. Once he settled down, I thought he started to show some more signs. So to me, mechanically speaking, his ball sailed and was soft and fluttered when he didn't use his mechanics, and I thought when he pressed, his mechanics winged.
How much are you concerned with that, though? Because we've seen guys, we saw Byron Leftwich try to tighten up his delivery, and it lasted until the games got real. You know, I mean, it looked
great. Right,
because
you go back
summer.
To what you know.
We've seen Tim Tebow try to do it throughout his career.
Come on.
But you know what I'm talking about. You know what? I mean, regardless.
Don't get me started.
I shouldn't have, but and I'm not trying to go down that road, but you know what I'm talking about. Guys that try to change what they've been fundamentally doing for the last 10 or 12 years is difficult to do.
It can be tough, and you know, you're right, but I don't think his mechanics were awful either. I mean, you gotta admit, there was some in the preseason and in the early part of his playing time when he went to San Diego, he made some throws that, you know, just happened.
Yep.
And they looked natural, and the balls got there. So I don't think the kid's ever going to be a great practice player, and they kind of know that. And I was out there Monday. He was dreadful on Monday. I mean, I'll be the first one to say that. He was awful on Monday, but then he bounces back. And he made a throw, I think it was yesterday, to, I forget who caught it, over on the sideline. It was like you went, yeah, that's the kind of throw that he has to make. He made a throw to Julius Thomas where Julius Thomas ran into the gate the other day. That's, I think, he got hurt. He ran into the gate making his catch. He dropped it right in there. Julius Thomas put his feet down, toe tapped, and, you know, would have been 25-yard gain. I think those throws are there. He's not a concern to me.
How good can they be this year?
It's all on him. I mean, if I think he, look, they can be 8-8 if he's, you know, 3,300 yards and, you know, 20 touchdowns and 13-14 interceptions.
Right.
If he's 3,600 yards and 25 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, they could be a playoff team. Now, I'm not saying he's going there, and I'm not thinking right now on paper that they are a playoff team. But I just go back to, you know, a group of young guys start believing in themselves and they have talent. It's just a matter of if they start playing to that talent. In 96, that team, they've started 4-7. They were terrible. And by the end of the year, you know, people say the Denver game that year, they were 14-point underdogs. they outgained them 400 yards to 200 in the last three quarters of that game. That wasn't a fluke. They beat them up and down. That team grew up. This team needs to be at that stage where they can grow up this year.
What is the worst-case scenario for this? Obviously, you know, rash of injuries, Bortles plays terribly.
If the quarterback stinks and doesn't play well, they're not going to be good no matter how many guys they sign. So if he's bad, they're going to be bad, and you'll probably see changes. I mean, that's the reality of the National Football League.
What kind of change are we talking? I mean, Gus Bradley need to win an X number of games this year.
I don't know if X number of games. I think you need to be playing competitive football late in the season.
That seems
with
to be
meaningful games late, like in December.
Right, that seems to be the party line that we've all kind of collectively landed at, where they need to be still in the race, realistically having a chance maybe to earn a wild card.
I mean, you know, you got to look at it from Gus's standpoint. This is a guy who got a roster that was blown up. I mean, it was blown up, and he's got nothing but. Nobody's ever done the research, I don't think, but I don't know if there's been an offense that started five or six rookies like they did a year ago for most of the season.
Right.
And so I think, you know, then he fired his offensive coordinator, which, hey, give him credit for that. If the coordinator wasn't the guy, yeah, he probably should have vetted it better to figure out if he was the guy before he, but when he got here and he realized he wasn't the guy, then go make the change. If you're not happy with him, go make the change. And I think he made the change.
Do you like the hiring of Olsen?
I do. I think the offense will be more my kind of offense, which is an NFL offense. Look, there's no way Blake Bortles should be running zone read. He just shouldn't have been. This is a franchise quarterback. Yeah, he's athletic and he can move around, but you can't have your quarterback running zone read as a rookie. You just can't.
That's a Pete Prisco preference.
The game is meant to be played in the pocket. It always will be. It always has been.
You say that.
But he was effective doing it.
He was
very
effective
doing
it.
That's accidents. Eventually, you don't get faster.
Russell Wilson's gotten to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row.
And he rushed for 900. Well, he's arguably one of the greatest defenses of all time. Think about this. If the Seattle Seahawks lead the NFL in scoring defense this year, it would be four straight years in a row. The last team to do that was the 50s Browns. They were a dynasty.
I love that team.
Yeah.
With these Browns.
They were a dynasty, by the way. But still,
still talk about them in Cleveland.
That tells you how it's easy to play quarterback and make those kind of plays and accident kind of runs when you have that defense and you're never asked to be playing from behind.
All right. Granted, it's easier when you're not playing from behind. I don't think it's just easy just because you have a good defense to make the plays Russell Wilson makes.
I could show you at least 50 plays where that guy goes back in the pocket and he's got receivers open and he leaves clean pockets. And, yeah, sometimes he turns them into big plays, but he shouldn't be leaving the pocket. Stay there, make your throws, go through your progression.
If you don't stay in the pocket, Pete Prisco's not going to
No, you can scramble out of it. Just scramble out of it like Aaron Rodgers does and keep your head up and fire a laser.
Who's going to win the NBA Finals?
After last night and LeBron and this mask of crappy players, the cast of crappy players. Come on, he's good, but that's Golden State's going to blow him out.
Going to blow him out now. It's over.
Done. Finished.
Whoever won last night's game probably would have won the
Matt
final.
Matt Dellavedova became who he is last night. That's who you are.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the league is full of guys that for a week or 2 week period, if they get the minutes, can
Linsanity.
Do some things.
Remember Linsanity?
It was the greatest 2 weeks in Knicks fans' lives since 1999. Peter, are you kidding me? Remember every second of it.
See, you don't remember the old. I grew up a Knicks fan. The old Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, Pearl Monroe.
I was living in Connecticut when they were winning championships in New York, and it was just like on the periphery of my consciousness back there. I was a little too young, a little younger than you.
I remember when I was 9 years old. I think it was 9 years. Was it 69 when they played the Lakers?
Seventy. Yeah.
So I was nine, but my dad made me go to bed, and I was sleeping in upstairs. We were living outside in Pennsylvania, and I hear. Screaming from the basement, I go running down. I go, what the heck? What the heck? And my dad's sitting there, and Jerry West had just made that 60s whatever foot shot.
Right,
my dad's
right, screaming.
And then he let me watch the overtime, and the Knicks actually beat him in the overtime.
Mr. Clutch. Yeah. Jerry West. All right, Pete Prisco, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Clutch with CBS Sports. Look for some retrospective on the Jags 96
in the fall,
season.
Yeah.
Coming up in the fall on some CBS platform.
There you go.
All right, Pete. Good to see you, buddy.
You got it, guys.
There
you
go. Pete Prisco, CBS Sports here with us. We'll come back here from Mark Lamping as well as take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. Who do you think is the most worrisome projected starter on the Jaguars roster? It's called Nolan Cadillac Friday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Pete Prisco, Tony, I didn't convince him that quarterback should occasionally run the ball in that break. I did my best. Not a fan of that.
No,
doesn't
he's not.
Matter.
And he's never going to be.
Russell Wilson, stay in the pocket. Hey, you know, doesn't matter. Forget those 800 rushing yards. Stay in the pocket, Russ. Stay in the pocket. Make Pete happy. All right. We've got the fan feedback spotlight to look back on coming up. We got Mark Lamping yesterday. Join me here in studio, Tony. Talked about a lot of stuff. Last year was a tough year to top, right? I mean, they had the scoreboards coming in. They had all the new seating options. They had the cabanas. They had the pool. They had everything going on. Going to be tough to ever top an offseason that adds that many amenities to the fan experience. But we did ask Mark Lamping, what is new on tap for 2015? Well, what is new for 2015? It's going to be hard to top last year in terms of a big rollout, but what do you have new in store for this year?
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to top what we did last year, but you know, we have this commitment that, you know, the best stadiums are those stadiums that continue to evolve and give fans something new to look forward to each and every year, and we know we need to do that if we're going to be successful in trying to extend the useful life of Everbank Field. So this year we're introducing a couple new products. We're introducing really an exciting product that's called the Terrace Suite Chalet. So we're actually at both the eastern and western end of the Terrace Suites. There are some elevated seats that currently exist. We're actually removing those seats. We're going to replace them in the center of the Terrace Suite, and then we're building two outdoor chalets that are like outdoor suites that are also part of the Terrace Suite. So a very unique product, not something that, you know, anyone has ever offered before, and we're excited about that. We've had very positive response locally from the kickoff tables that we put in the clubs last year. We put about 40 kickoff tables in. Those are all sold out with a waiting list, and we're adding additional club table inventory actually in front of the Bud Light Zone. So that's going to be a very interesting place, a much different feel and vibe than what's happening in the clubs. And, you know, on top of everything we did last year, in fact, you know, yesterday in Barcelona, Spain, at a worldwide stadium conference, Everbank actually received an award for the Stadium of the Year as it relates to premium seating. So, you know, what's happening here in Jacksonville, you know, obviously everybody here locally knows about it, but, you know, we're beginning to get some notoriety, you know, not only nationally, but internationally in this case.
The notoriety on itself is fine, but the response to it locally, I think, was the best thing, Tony. The waiting list for some of the seating and the fact that it was sold out enabled them to keep the average ticket price a little bit lower than the norm in the National Football League, but overall get a little more revenue out of those ticket sales.
Yeah, they're finding ways to make it work here in Jacksonville, and we'll continue to, and hopefully the team catches up to what they're doing away from the field and the upgrades they're making in the stadium. Mark Lamping joining you yesterday here on Jaguars Today was also asked about what he's most proud of.
I'm really proud, you know, not only for the Jaguars organization, but for the community, that people have stopped talking about the seats that are tarped, that people have stopped talking about games being blacked out, and people have stopped talking about the team moving from Jacksonville to Los Angeles, because we know those three topics were very prominent prior to Shad purchasing the team. And, you know, as a result of some of the decisions we've made, as a result of the financial commitment that Shad has made, and as a result of some of the programs we've implemented, particularly as it relates to trying to upgrade the fan experience, people have just simply stopped talking about those things that are so negative.
No, they stopped talking about the blackouts because immediately they came in and they said, we're not going to talk about the black. There's no such thing as a blackout.
It's not happening.
Never going to happen again. And it was something as simple as that, that it just took it out of the conversation. You always knew they were going to be on TV, even if they weren't selling the tickets. And then you didn't dwell on week to week, at least I didn't as much, what is the ticket sales situation? Obviously, for them, they want it to be as healthy as possible. And I asked Mark Lamping yesterday about that. About season ticket sales and where they are at for 2015.
Yeah, things are going well. The market continues to respond. The development of the regional market continues to be positive, although we have a lot more work to do there. But, you know, as we sit here today, we're running a little bit ahead of what our projections were. I'm confident that we're going to have more season tickets sold at the start of this season than we did at the start of last season.
It's good to hear.
Yeah, I like the outpacing the projections is good.
No, it's good to hear, especially, look, I was as curious to see what it was going to look like going into year three after seven wins in the first two as anybody, right? I mean, what is the confidence level of this fan base in this city and what this team's going to be able to do in 2015? And if they're ahead of whatever their expectations were as far as season ticket sales, maybe, you know, there is this expectation for this football team going into year three with these guys that this is the year they're going to be turning it into a bit more of a winner. Mark Lamping also talked yesterday about London, and it's something that comes up every time Mark Lamping talks, but talked about London and again reiterated how it is exceeding what their expectations were.
It's done everything we had hoped and more. The strategy behind London was very, very simple. We needed to find new revenue streams that were either untapped here in Jacksonville or that were coming from outside Jacksonville. And London was part of that strategy, as are a lot of other things we're trying to do. And the reason we're doing that is to try to stabilize the team here.
That was a consistent theme of Mark Lamping's yesterday. You know, everything's being done to stabilize the franchise here in Jacksonville. Part of that would be the Shipyards project, which was unveiled as a goal this offseason. And I asked Mark about that, kind of, is there an update on that, where things stand? And he got into a few reasons why the Shipyard project he feels is so important to the Jaguar organization.
Well, the reasons behind our interest in the Shipyards has not changed at all. You know, it is part of our plan to stabilize Jacksonville as an NFL city. And the reason that we're interested in the Shipyards is that we think it's important that the front door to the sports complex be welcoming. We think it's important that when people come visit the sports complex, that they have more things to do before the events that they're attending, not just Everbank Field, but the arena as well as the baseball grounds, and they have more things to do after, basically extend their stay here in Jacksonville. And we believe that the more people that work downtown, the more people that live downtown, and the more people that visit downtown, ultimately that will mean good things for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And, you know, he also went on to talk about, you know, kind of the timetable for that, and said at one point, you know, some people may think like a 10-year timetable works for them. He goes, that doesn't work for us. Something along those lines. In other words, Shad's not, he wants it done yesterday, right? He wants to get moving on this thing. And somebody tweeted to me, said, should I take that as a threat? I think it's just, look, they're not above putting pressure on, okay?
Sure.
They understand Shad Khan knows how to negotiate, but I think it's more a case of just, once again, saying, hey, here's a guy, he's not very patient, he wants this done, we're trying to put all these conditions in place, here's a big project, and it's all with the same goal, stabilize the franchise. Tony, that Shipyard project gets done. If it does, there'll never be another question about this. You know what I mean? I mean, you're not going to that much infrastructure being poured into this thing. I don't think there's a question now about the long-term viability, as long as it continues to grow in the right direction. And that's important. It's got to continue to go in that direction. The biggest thing that will help that is they need to produce some wins for the fan base out there. It's simple as that. They've done all the other niceties. Now give them something to get excited about on the field. It's nice to see that the ticket sales are outpacing last year, despite, as you said, a third consecutive was terrible season in the one-loss record.
Yeah.
Averaging 3 wins over the last 3 years. Today we asked you, fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, who's the starter, the projected starter for this team that you're most concerned about in 2015, Tony? Some of the responses were what?
Here's what we got from Irish Jag, Sergio Brown, I guess, but it's the offseason. Hope springs eternal. From Eric, it's Jokel for me. He has to play better this year, and we all know it's his make-or-break year. From Jason, Devon House, I think Colvin and McCray are better than he is, but his contract will force him to start. From Cristiano, Bortles, it's all about the quarterback. From Alex, Sergio Brown. From Brandon, Luke Jokel is the only answer. Hashtag get well, Tony. Thank you, Brandon. From Demetrius, Cipriani does too much guessing and finds himself out of position. Can't ignore the lack of impact plays either. From Nick, Jeremy Parnell has been a backup all his career and now is counted on to solidify the O-line. Hashtag prove your worth. From Colby, Julius Thomas staying healthy will be number one target. From Alvaro, I select Blake Bortles. This is the year he shows he is a backup or an elite quarterback. And from Isaiah, Sergio Brown. And from the Hardy Bros, Dan Scuda in a new scheme, and I get the feeling he may be Dakota Watson 2.0. Hashtag hope I'm wrong.
Let's hope you're wrong. And here's some on Facebook, the Facebook page, Jaguars Today. Shane Cash said, anyone on the O-line, Bortles' success depends on it. A lot of optimism and hope and nothing proven yet. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Derek Stewart, anyone who steps into the free safety role, same thing, hashtagging it there. I hate to say it, but pause, says Johnny Crum. Ryan Reddy agrees, pause. Can he stay healthy? If he doesn't, who can really replace him? Joshua Lee Wright, I can't pick them all, he said. And then Josh Wiggins said his biggest worry is Luke Jokel, who spent his entire career trying to mimic Guy Wimper. My 7-year-old nephew, says Josh, got a spinning top for Christmas last year. I think that's a lie. Nobody gets tops for Christmas anymore.
No.
It's not 1952. He was appropriately, said Josh, named LJ after this failed draft pick. So I did find it interesting. Pete Prisco just basically, he's bigger, he's going to be fine. I don't think it's that simple with Luke Jokel. Yes, he's put on the 15 good pounds of muscle, and that's going
to
help.
He was the first guy that came to mind for me.
Strength, absolutely better in that department. Technique, hand placement, all these things that I'm not qualified to judge on a play-by-play basis, but everyone who is tells you were concerns for him over the last couple of years. Let's hope he takes that big step forward this
year.
Sure.
At least with Sergio Brown, you may have James Sample to try, right?
Right.
Josh Evans may not have been great at it last year, but you know he can play the position a little bit. If Luke Jokel isn't the answer at left tackle this year,
you're in trouble.
Right. What else do they even have on the roster that can play left tackle? I mean, seriously, that's where they're at this year because, look, it's the guy they invested a number 2 overall pick in. It makes sense that they would be depending on him to take that significant step forward, but he's the first guy I thought of with this question.
All right, get better, Tony. Hopefully we'll get some good news on that whole arm situation soon.
I'm sure it'll be another month.
All right, you got Jurassic World this week, right?
Yeah, going this afternoon.
You got trivia Sunday night?
Sunday night over at Cole Haynes over on Penman and Atlantic, 7:30. Coming out and test your trivia knowledge. And, hey, stick around, watch Game 5 of the NBA Finals as well.
There you go. I've got the season debut of Running with MJD tonight on Sirius. Maurice and I'll do shows tonight and Sunday. And I've got one tomorrow night as well. It's that time. Somebody texted me earlier and said, how are you drafting right now? What do you mean, how am I drafting?
He's drafting.
You could ask, why are you drafting right now? And that's because the drafts I'm doing will go in some of the fantasy sports publication magazines that you see out on the newsstands that we participate in drafts at this time because you got to get them out on deadline. But you don't get to 19 leagues in a season, Tony, without getting started early.
No.
I can't do 19 drafts at once. I got to space them out a little bit. So got 2 under my belt for this week. We'll see where things go with that. Thanks, Pete Prisco, for stopping in today. Glad we could bring you some of the thoughts of Gus Bradley, Doug Marone, Mark Lamping as well.